Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
My name is Alan, and we are from ReverseThieves.com. If you want to give us any suggestions or comments, criticism, you can email us at ReverseThieves@gmail.com. You can join our Discord and go on there. It's actually pretty lively.
You can go in there to see me talk about One Piece every week because it's exploding my mind every chapter recently. Gotten a few new faces in there, so I feel like there's more chatter now.
And there was, what do you call it? There's still even some residual Otakon talk, which is very relevant for this month's podcast.
But first,
we have the Type Moon Minute, and there is literally so much Type Moon Minute news that came out this month that I'm restricting myself to only three major items that I think are the most important. People really want the rest.
You can talk about it in the Discord.
There you go. I was going to say, people say it, I do like a supplementary podcast. Now that I have a decent home computer again, I can actually record stuff at home again. A lot of stuff. So let's talk about probably the most shocking news, which was while we were at Otakon, Fate Grand Order had its 7th anniversary. And usually the anniversary servants are pretty interesting. They have a decent amount of fanfare. It's usually but the shocking ones are the New Year's servants. But this year, they blew everybody away because it was Archetype Earth, a.k.a. Arquid, a.k.a. the main heroine of Tsuhime, made her appearance in Fate Grand Order, which is something that people have wanted since the game originally came out. And as I've mentioned on the podcast before, the Tsuhime fans always feel like they've been neglected and forgotten by Type Moon. And the fact that, they've gotten the remake and they finally had their appearance. I actually saw a bunch of, normally crusty, old, bitter Tsuhime fans actually, I can only assume via the internet, crack something close to a smile and engage in what I would call happiness at this news. Yeah, it's one of those things that if you're outside of the Type Moon fandom, you're like, oh, okay. If you're inside of the Type Moon fandom, you're like, oh my god, Arc is finally in FGO. She's finally made it. What do you call it? Saber dominance over.
Really?
There was actually a long discussion of, has MASH become the new Saber? And a whole bunch of other talk. But it's a weird paradigm shift of her being in there. It's actually weirdly important. And so, for the last few months, FGO has been hovering between the 7th and 6th most, profitable mobile game, and shot right up for the last 2 weeks to number one because of Ark. Which is a big deal. People are very happy about that. Maybe Tsuhime fans will learn not to be bitter. I don't know. We'll see how long it lasts. Also, somewhat Tsuhime related, was that Evo was recently, and for the first time, Melty Blood is a main stage game at Evo, and it's quite the turnabout for it because it's famous for having to be featured at a bathroom at a hotel close to where Evo is, or in Denny's parking lot next to.
Funnily enough, I watched quite a bit of Evo by happenstance, and I did catch this Melty Blood grand final.
So yeah, it's another weird sign that Kite Moon fandom is kind of, I wouldn't say mainstream, but pretty damn close. And, by the way, I just want everybody to know I won Evo.
I thought that was the news. I was like, that's the most important part. That
I forgot the actual player, but they were playing Hisui. And so, yes, Hisui.
And she beat a vampire.
Yes,
or somebody. And so at first, I was rooting for that player. And then as we were watching, someone then explained that that was a vampire. So then I switched.
You didn't even instinctually root for Hisui.
I was just like, the player who was playing Hisui was dominating the tournament. So I love, like, you want, I mean, at least I do, and I think most people do, like, I want to see the actual match, you know, like, you want it to keep going and, like,
you like a little bit of an underdog story.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't want to just see, like, a bloodbath. So, like, I had been watching multiple rounds and it was like, this is terrible. Like, people are just, like, falling, like, it was terrible. So it was like, no, we gotta, like, root this person on. So, like, that, it, like, so did you have, like, a real fight to the, you know, to the end to get that final?
Then you found that he was playing.
Yeah, it was like after they had, I watched it, like, multiple, but I think they had a bracket reset. So, like, after that, I was like, okay, now I can root for the Hisui.
When I found out they were playing a dirty vampire, my opinion changed completely.
Yeah, I mean, Hisui sets tables in that game, and, like, yeah, it's very amusing.
They're mostly a joke character.
They dominated, so whatever, joke character.
And there was actually, this is minor, but there was a bunch of minor Melty Blood news that actually came out during the anniversary as well. That Mash from FGO is going to be in Melty Blood. And Dave Cabrera, favorite character, Neko Arc, is being... who's been in the game for a while. So it's just in this new iteration. This is her first appearance. And apparently they're majorly changing how she plays. News that's interesting to me. They are adding a more robust extra story for the two of the main heroines so far, Arc and Seal. And they're, you know, they're tinkering, especially after Evo, a bunch of the balancing characters, adding new moves and stuff. But I think one of my main criticisms of the game, if anybody remembers my Melty Blood review, was that, unlike previous iterations, it was kind of story light. And so it seems like they realized that. And now that, you know, you can just add, you know, downloadable content, they're really making the story more robust. So they're basically adding in story retroactively. So I'm glad to see that. And the last little bit of news I wanted to mention just came out today, because the other big news is tomorrow they're having a stream about the FGO summer event, and I think it's basically going to start right after that, so we'll probably hear about that next month. But the news that just came out today is apparently Kite Moon fans revolted enough that Kite Moon is changing how they're doing their Comic-Con stuff. Because, as I mentioned last month, there's that little triangle of death where, the main Titan booth, you have the Ark of Wada booth, the Honey and Clover Lady booth, and the Bamboo Broom booth that has, like, a bunch of exclusive Kite Moon stuff under the, you know, when they went, before they were Kite Moon, Natsumi Taguchi were Bamboo Broom, and that's how they went to Comic-Con. So it's like the return of Bamboo Broom. And so they announced they were going to put out 3 books. They were going to put out book on Avalon DeFay, they were going to put out a general Typhoon book, and only was going to be sold at Comic Cat was Kaleidoworks, which was like a super exclusive, fancy Takuchi art book from like his beginning of his career to today. And basically, the Typhoon fans went, COVID is spiking like crazy in Japan. Comic Con's going to be mad crowded. And there are going to be a whole bunch of Typhoon fans who they know the only place they can get these Typhoon books is, these exclusive Bamboo Broom books is at Comic Con. If they know this, then A, people who are at risk for COVID might risk it anyhow just to get this exclusive stuff. And even worse, people who test positive might go anyway because it's the only chance that they have to get this stuff. So Typhoon said that they would sell the stuff at Comic Cat, but they would also sell a limited number online to encourage people who are ill for one reason or another not to attend Comic Cat and get other people ill or in danger of their own health.
That's like very horrifying to me that people would be like, I don't care if I have COVID, I'm going to infect thousands of people for some exclusive merch like that. I feel like that's a problem.
I mean, that's what my roommate said.
Like, I don't feel like that's Typhoon's fault. Like,
but yeah, it's just enough fans realize this is going to happen, so we have to do something to at least minimize. Because if we don't, it's going to happen.
That's horrible. So did that happen yet?
Yeah, they just announced it. The Comic Con hasn't happened yet, okay. But they have announced as of today. I don't know if other companies will follow suit. That was what Titan was doing. So I thought those were the three most interesting, at least to Al, Typhoon things. And next month I will tell you about all the craziness. I might also just roll in the big interviews that happened this month with Tatsu Taguchi the next month. So I will see you next time, Typhoonatics.
Well, speaking of cons, it's certainly not as big as Comiket coming up, but this whole episode, obviously, is dedicated to Otakon 2022. We are just about a week out from coming back from the con, and so it's like fresh, but we've had some time to process and you know, gather our thoughts.
And I will apologize right now that we call it. If I have forgotten anything important about this con, my week at work has been so horrible. I like literally had to on the bus ride over to Kate's, like try to remind myself this much stuff because like work has so wiped me out. I feel like it like hit my memory.
Oh no! Well, I'll try to remind you too.
All right.
As we go. So as many of you might remember, earlier in 2021, Otakon was asking people for donations. They were sort of, it wasn't like a Kickstarter, but they were kind of crowdfunding because them not having a convention in 2020 had really hit them very hard on their finances, and because they're a nonprofit, they have certain restrictions about hanging on to money and whatnot. So one question that a lot of people had at Otakon 2021 was, what's the future of the con? And like, you know, like what, like, did it help? You know, like all of that. Well, Otakon 2022 is the biggest Otakon ever by like a huge amount.
pretty safe to say Otakon is saved.
Otakon is now. Saved!
Because, yeah, and it was like, last few years really felt like touch and go. And I know a lot of people were worried about the future of Otakon. You know, they're a non-profit and they rely heavily kind of on their war chest. That was very, like, I remember pre-COVID, they had said that, what do you call it, they had a pretty large war chest and they, you know, they didn't expect the drop down that they did, but you know, they had basically money saved away for a rainy day, and then COVID happened, and it seemed like the future of the con was distinctly in doubt.
But this year, we have a, not an exact number, but it is above 40,000. And again, that's way, that's like 15,000 more people than last year at the con, but that's also more than the biggest year in Baltimore, which I think they said was like 36 or 35. And that was like the anniversary year where they had the most ridiculous concert lineup, like of all time. It was so bananas. And the move to DC had hurt them yeah. quite a bit, which I personally was always so surprised about. I really didn't think that it would. But I, you know, it became a slightly more expensive con, I think, for people once it left Baltimore. I don't think it's, in my mind, it's not significantly, but you know, I'm privileged enough to be able to say that. So they have struggled a little bit from that DC move, even though I think it was a great move for them. I think the consent, you know, we've talked about all of that. Like, I think it's all good. The space is great. I feel like the food option, everything about the area, I think is really good. So I'm glad that they have now seen a turnover and now it's like, 40,000 fans showed up and they also masked and they vaxxed. And like, I was actually incredibly impressed by their implementation of their vaccine policy and their enforcement of masks. I also felt like people were more accepting of those things. Mm-hmm. At least it felt that way. Last year, I felt like we saw a lot of unmasked people, and I really did not encounter that as much this year.
And I think my roommate mentioned this. But it felt like the staff was also much more empowered, whether it was personal or like a mandate, I can't tell you, I'm not a member of staff, but to just basically call people out and be like, put up that mask there, buddy. So I think that helped a lot as well.
We did see some longer lines at the con this year, especially on pre-reg, which has typically, especially since they've moved, really not been an, like, it's usually like a very in and out, as long as you don't get there right when it opens. But if, you know, you get there a little later in the evening, it's usually like completely empty, and that was not the case this year. Luckily, they had started doing, and it sounded like this went well and they're going to continue it, but some of the hotels, you were now able to pick up your badge. We were able to pick up our vax wristbands at our hotel, and that was fantastic. Just another great change. So that really alleviated some of that. And I'm so glad that I did not have to get in that line, because we had an amazing view from our room of the con center and we could see the line. And I was practically like live broadcasting the line on Thursday, because it was sort of surprising, and then it started to rain, and, you know, my guess is the wristband, you know, like just the vax checking took a little bit longer than maybe they anticipated. And they did talk about at feedback that they were understaffed, especially when that, once you heard like, oh, 15,000 people more showed up than we were kind of expecting, some of the line issues now make a lot more sense.
Yeah, because it was hard for a lot of people to get in on Saturday. I know my roommate took like an hour to get into the con on Saturday. Came in kind of like in the peak, line crunch time, whereas we had kind of skipped by that by coming in a little earlier.
Yeah, it seemed like they had made some changes from Friday, because Friday there was a massive double line around the convention center pretty much until like late afternoon. And that was the, you know, registration / get into the con line. So I was sort of surprised to see that. And again, they kind of attributed that to like the staff, like understaffing. And more people showing up. I mean, I think they were really
assuming that they were going to get like maybe just a little bit more than last year, not.
And they didn't even, I think they didn't even maybe think they were going to get more than last year, because we've seen, right, that like a lot of cons, and I really appreciate Otakon not changing their COVID policy, because they put in this vaccination requirement months ago, and we've seen other cons try to like dial it back suddenly, like right before the con or like a couple weeks before to change their policy. And I don't know what that's coming from. Like, do these cons think people are not showing up for these reasons? And I hope that Otakon can now prove, like, nobody was upset about this. Everybody was here. So, like, you don't need to change those policies for people to show up to your con. And I don't know if that's what people are worried about. And I wonder if Otakon was sort of also thinking, like, oh, is this going to affect our numbers negatively? I didn't personally end up in any giant lines, but I talked to many people that did and, you know, observed it. So I don't want to overemphasize it, because I didn't was not personally slighted by it, but I also feel like I understand and think it needs to be addressed, because especially for people who are only there a day. You know, I always feel bad for anybody who has a one-day badge. And if you spend 3 or 4 hours just getting in, you know, it feels like such a waste.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, we're in a bit of a privileged position. Being able to enter through the hotel is always helpful. The fact that, you know,
we went in early, so
The fact that I was press, I only used like the secret press entrance once, but I mean, it could have theoretically held me up a lot more had I not used that one.
And I guess actually, though, I will say that I didn't encounter the line because I was afraid to leave, and I really wanted to leave at one point to go back to my hotel to take a break, and I was like afraid if I left about how long it would take me to get back in. So I guess I almost experienced like the reverse. Like I was like, oh, I cannot now go do the thing that I wanted to do because I might not be able to get back in time. I do feel like Otakon seemed to acknowledge all of this and understand that they have to do something differently. So I have full faith that they can, but I think they definitely got the message, and many people at feedback talked about this, which was especially for those, there shouldn't be a tier. I'm not trying to make any hierarchies here, but if you are paying for the hotel that's connected to the con, you're paying a premium. It's an expensive hotel. to not be able then to utilize, like, I have picked this hotel specifically so that I can, like, go back to my room, drop my stuff off, go, you know, like, have that convenience, then, like, why, you know, like, you have, they have to address that. Or people who are, like, across the street, you know, like, all those things, like, they have to take those things into account. And I think that they will. I just think it was a, there were too many people and not enough people ready for those people, which I do not think will be a mistake next year.
Yeah. I didn't see any, like, line con standard, you know.
I'm surprised because, I mean, once you got in.
Yeah.
That, though, I didn't feel like...
There were a few points where, like, they closed elevators, escalators and stuff to just, like, kind of massage traffic a little bit. But nothing was as bad as the infamous, you know, Bridge of Death.
Oh, my God.
Out from the Baltimore Convention Center that would just, you know...
There's two choke points. But I think the thing that... I don't know if this came up. I know it came up with other people that I was talking with, but... Baltimore, there were two really specific places where there were choke points, and because Otakon knew that, they could, like, they always had eyes mm-hmm. on there to, like, fix it. It was like, no, you know, like, there was always people there making sure that those things didn't happen, and of course they still happened occasionally, but I think the DC Center is, like, so much bigger, and there's so many ways around.
And it's almost always at any point, like, usually, like, there's stairs here, an elevator here, an escalator here. So, like, there's, like, because, like, the main problem with the Baltimore Convention Center was, like, if you didn't go over that one bridge, then you had to go all the way outside the con and around. And then there was that little choke point up between the stairs to the, like, the new annex section that, like, bottlenecked. And once again, you had to go outside the convention center and go all the way around or just wait in this massive choke point. Even when they, like, did close things off or, like, restricted things to flow, there was usually at least two other ways you could go while still remaining in the convention center to get anywhere, which I think also helped a lot.
I agree with that. I think there are fewer entrances, though, into the the DC center. You know, like at Baltimore, there was like, I would say there was, like, five ways, you know, like, there was, like, two different hotels that fed into it. Then there were two front entrances. Maybe there were four ways to get in. So, like, I know that they've been trying to, you know, keep, like, I think people are encouraging them, like, wanting them to open more entrances. I wonder if that is something they will consider next year. Because there's, like, that one on the opposite side by the, like, the train, like, the metro. There's, like, an entrance over there that is only an exit. And I know that sometime on Saturday, they did open, like, a couple of extra entrances into the con. And they were for... If you had no bags, like, if there was, you already had your Vax band and you already had, like, your bag, like, you had everything, but you didn't have a bag to have checked. There was, like, some temporary entrance that they opened.
I didn't know about that.
I only know about it from their Twitter. I did feel like they were trying to troubleshoot it a little bit. And I think, I wonder if those things will be more permanent next year. Like, they're... That way, there is a few more entrances, because Baltimore, let's not talk about pre-reg line in Baltimore because it's so bad, but, like, getting into the con once it was open usually was fine, because there were multiple ways that you, like, oh, this one's, like, kind of, it's, like, crowded over here, I can, like, go in through the hotel and, like, that. And then the thing was, right, is that normally going in through the Marriott is the, like, secret entrance, but it was weird that they, I think they started directing people to the Marriott, And then it got bad and it was like out the door. So like, I do think it might just be a matter of if they had like one more entrance, maybe it would alleviate some of that. So like, I feel like they are looking at options.
Yeah. Yeah, the things they begin to be done, especially, you know, with future growth in mind.
And then there were, you know, times when I think at some point they also, on Saturday, did they, like, stop letting people into the dealer's area?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think I ever set foot in the dealer's room.
Neither did I. I gave up on autographs pretty quickly after Saturday, like, after just how many people were in the con on Saturday and, like, all the dealer's hall shenanigans, people were trying to get down there, people were getting stuck there, like you said, rerouting the line because there was, like, too many people, like, fire hazard, all of that. I really hope that this pushes the staff to move autographs out of the dealer's hall. They seemed amenable to it. I brought it up at feedback, but they've said that before where they're like, yeah, we're looking at that. And like, there are good reasons to move it out of there. And I don't know, you know, like really what's sort of preventing them from doing that. I don't know if it's a staff issue, like, oh, it's like, well, then we have to have more people, you know, in this separate area to like, do whatever, I don't know. But I think that is like one of my number one requests, especially because I think it worked really well in Baltimore to have it in its own section. And you weren't then dealing with like the dealer's hall is always it's the busiest place in the con. It's a place that I never go if I don't have to. But that's where the most people are constantly going. So like, adding another layer of like why people need to be there doesn't seem necessary. Also, they mentioned, which I didn't even think about, which the staffer actually mentioned that feedback, was if they moved it out of the dealer's hall, they're no longer subject to the hours of the dealer's hall, because they implied that, you know, some of the guests are like, I'll do a signing at 6 p.m. or whatever, but the dealer's hall is closed at 6 p.m. on Saturday, so you can't do it. So it might also then open up more time for guests, or like spreading them out more throughout the day if they moved it out of there and it had its own hours and didn't have to, you know, worry about what was going on in that other hall. And of course, it would alleviate some of the traffic down there. So I like the idea of moving. The big, I think, in terms of space and where things were, I think the big change this year was that the dance was no longer in the con center. Not that I go to the dance or know anything about the dance ever, but I did notice like, oh, this huge thing is no longer here and it has been put in the hotel. And so that big space, which is actually near the video game room, is perfect for autographs. So if the dance doesn't come back, maybe that is a good place for it to go. It's right by Con Jail. It was down that hall, Al.
Yeah. That's just one section. We just called Con Jail because it was just these like little glass cages that I think connected to conference rooms, but they just...
I think it connects to the video game room, but for some reason they were all blocked off. We didn't see anyone in Con Jail, but I think that's what they could be used for.
Yeah, it was like,
I should have taken a picture.
You try to restart the butt scratcher meme, you go to Con Jail.
Yeah, exactly. People could be, you could like put people in Con Jail. Also, that could be like a fun / funny
photo shoot,
or like you could like pay, donate money to Otakon to like put somebody in Con Jail, you know, like for like 5 minutes or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, and then like you get to say like why they're in Con Jail. Like, I could think of hilarious things to do with this. But yeah, like down that way, that's where it could be. And I think the other change in terms of the layout was they moved one of the panel rooms. So the only panel room that was upstairs was panel one and the AMV theater. So those two were upstairs now, and then all the rest of the panel rooms, video rooms, were in that bottom area that where they usually are. And they moved the maid cafe from one side to the other. I don't know why, but they did. But I liked the panel room changes. I thought that that was nice. And it seemed, again, to help alleviate some traffic, because a lot of the big panels and a lot of the big guests were going to be in that room. And so, like, Trigger, for example, was in that room, so that when the giant line...
That line was funny because I got in that line and I was like, oh, this line's bad, but not that bad. And I didn't realize that it was like along the wall. Then it went down this corridor that I didn't see and looped back around. I was like, this whole like hidden line.
But somehow you got in.
Right? Yeah, I got in. It was fun. I also showed up like 20 minutes early.
But that's all. Like, I feel like that's good planning, though, right? Like, 20 minutes early is a perfectly reasonable amount of time to, like, show up before a panel and, like, get in. Like, you know, like, you shouldn't have to waste your con at Line Con.
Yeah.
So.
I got in, like, it was only one third filled. So, like, if I had waited a little longer, I probably could have still gotten in. I just want to make one complaint before we move on. Because you mentioned the video rooms. I went in the video rooms to check around. And speaking of Melty Blood, I saw no Melty Blood at the...
Oh, the video game room.
Yeah. Because I figured, oh, Melty Blood, now officially out in English on Switch and PS4. And so I expected, like... I didn't expect, like, three tables of Melty Blood, but I expected, like... one console running, or like people thought I was like expecting like a Melty Blood arcade cabinet because they have those in Japan. And I was like, no, I just expected like somebody to set up a Switch with Melty Blood on it, but wasn't there. I'm like, you're at it's at Evo this year, main stage. How weird is it? Wasn't that in the video game room? The one game I was looking for, I was gonna watch for a bit. They didn't have there. The people who run video game room, change of that.
Did somebody say, or did I make this up, that the people who usually run the video game room were not the people running it this year? So somebody did say that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was
different folks this year. So I don't know if that... Send your requests!
Because they also didn't have like the big Gundam pods this year and a few other things. So, yeah. The people ran the video game room this year. Trash, garbage, get rid of emoticon. They didn't have Melty Blood. Not worth your time. Says the guy who only goes to the video game room once a convention, only to see one game and then leaves.
I only went in the video game room this year to investigate for other people what was going on with Wild Bills. that's the only reason I was in there. For those of you interested, Wild Bills was once again there and also in the dealer's hall. And this year they had lids. So people were really excited about the lids. But also, Wild Bills was weirdly... closed at like 6 p.m. in the video game room or something weird. And it was...
That's in the dealer's room, it makes sense. Right. But in the video game room, you're like...
This is the one place that's open really late at the con.
Plus, it feels like, all right, maybe... On one hand, you're like, maybe you're losing money. But on the other hand, I'm sure people would just buy new mugs and memberships. Like, you know, it's like 8 o'clock. And I'm a little tired, but I want to continue playing this fighting game or try this, you know, rhythm game out. So I'll go and I'll buy a mug and, you know, get some caffeine in me and continue playing.
Yeah, I can't imagine them. Oh, you're thinking like, oh, nobody's buying new mugs. They're just like filling up. And so like that's, first of all, filling up costs them like nothing. A penny. So they would not be losing any money.
But I was like, even if that was like the mindset, I feel like the video game room is always going to be a place where people would be buying new mugs.
Totally.
And keeping you. So like, it feel like keeping it open would just be as profitable as any other part of the day.
And I think there was a lot of people talking about the food options that needed to be updated, and like that secret food hall that everyone calls Narnia has been gone for the last since the 2019 Otakon. It hasn't been there. It's been like under construction, and Otakon's like, when is this going to be freaking done, you guys? Because like Otakon obviously has no control over it. People would really like to see that come back. And that was actually one of the few places I have ever eaten in the con. And it's like, yeah, it's like not like amazing, but
if you're stuck in the con anyhow.
Well, like, and if you're stuck at the con, and this is like the elevated food at the con, I feel like that's the better option of like things that are inside the convention center. So I think that, you know, Otakon really thinks it'll be back next year, so that is the hope that there will be some more food.
I guess I'll wake up. Maybe I'll visit Narnia next year.
You gotta visit Narnia. All right, so if you listened to our pre-Otakon podcast, we did a rundown of some of the panels, some of the guests we were looking forward to, you know, some of the events, all that stuff. So let's start with some panel highlights.
You know, I've just realized that the more cons I go to, the more I'm just picky about Magical Girl panels. Like, we had this discussion, I think, on the way back home. But, like, I feel like I just judge Magical Girl panels now, like, really harshly. Because, like, I went to, like, a perfectly okay Magical Girl panel this year. But I was like, one, my general criticism. Ah, so you haven't watched any Precure yet. You were doing a Magical Girl panel. It was one of those panels that you could instantly tell, like, what made them want to do this panel was Madoka. And, like, we've had this discussion a little bit on podcasts and a lot outside of the podcast. You know, just in personal real life, me and Kate and other people we know about, like, how, like, Madoka is this weird shift point and, like, almost this, like, people, like, become their frame of reference for Magical Girls, which I think is very interesting. Because, like, you could just tell. They had seen Sailor Moon and they mentioned it, but, like, Madoka was just, like, such a shift focus point and, like central part of the. It wasn't bad. It was just, I don't know. It's just like, it was almost like they rushed through the history, got to Madoka, and then started talking again.
I feel like you can't go to, I'm just like banning you from Magical Girl panels.
What?
Like, stop going. It's like, what is it? It's like the old Taku who go to the panel for the young Taku just to like, judge what they're saying, as opposed to like actually engaging in their panel.
You've never seen Hot Catch off the stage.
Yeah, like don't be that guy, Al. I mean, obviously you weren't in the like heckling them from the audience or anything. I just wonder if like it's like, you know what? These panels are for you.
I think I thought I acknowledged that at the beginning of my talking about this panel.
I know, but now I'm banning you from going.
I see.
Like I'll be like, no! Like, I'll get that, like, you know that, like...
The little stage hook?
Yeah, the stage hook of all the... Ow! A panel that I was asked to judge, because I think it was called, like, We Judge Anime Dogs, or whatever it was. So that was actually my first panel of the con. So it sort of kicked off the con for me. And I liked their sort of conceit for the panel, which was they would, like, show a dog from an anime, and then they would either the anime might tell us, or they would, like, speculate about, like, what breed, like, actual breed it was, and then they would then tell us some stuff about, like, the breed, and then, so I feel like there was, like, a little bit of, like, dog education in there, and then also seeing dogs from anime. So I liked that as a general thrust. I would say my suggestions for the panel would be to, like, show more clips or more dogs, because I felt like maybe they spent almost too much time on their sort of pitching of, like, because each dog then had, like, is it a good dog? Is it accurate? Is it this? Is it that? And I was like, I felt like I just wanted a little more. I wanted more dogs. It was like, just less of that and more, just get more dogs in.
More dog clips, I think you.
I wanted more clips. They had pictures a lot of times, occasional clips. But I was like, more dog clips, just more dogs overall. Well, I was really happy to see Weed and Gein in here, because, like, very important. The most dog, weird dog anime there is. So you, like, you can't have, like, a dog panel without it. So, like, glad they introduced more people to, like, the Banana Pants franchise that is. But I felt like their timing also was a little, maybe they didn't have enough time to practice enough, because, like, I felt like they spent a lot of time at the beginning and then they were, like, rushing through stuff at the end. So, I think good job. Few suggestions. Also, do not put Nina from FMA. Nobody in the audience was happy about this joke. And, like, I felt like that was not... Everyone was like, as soon as it came up, everyone was like, no! No, boo. Just stop! Boo! Don't do... Like, don't... You don't need to do this.
Yeah, I mean, the internet has memed that incident for time and memoriam. You don't need to put it in your dog panel. That's going to have dog lovers in it.
Yeah, I was like, we don't. There are other dogs. I did really like that they put Ruth from Ancient Magus Bride was in there. Very, very good dog. So, yeah, just, I thought they had good choices. But I think they could have put even more in.
So, when you said panel that we were asked to judge.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't asked.
Okay, I thought you were going to say, I thought we were going to bring up the panel we saw together, which is the Phantom Thieves panel.
Woo! Solid panel, I thought.
Yeah, they had a nice selection.
I thought they could have more clips.
True.
They had a good... I thought they did a good job with the history, like, before anime. Like, what was the... I liked all of that. Like, you know, like, how did Japan become obsessed with Phantom Thieves? Like, I thought that was all really good. But I don't think there were any clips.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry. As I said, my memory is a little...
That's why I'm reminding you. But, yeah.
And they brought up Daughter of 20 Faces, which was...
That was, like, a glitter... See, that you're right. When I was like... If they don't bring this up, I don't accept this panel. But they did. And they had watched it, too, because they talked about it. So, like, they had actually seen it, which was important. But that was the thing. They had seen, and I felt like they had seen everything they talked about. So, they could have clipped things and put it in the panel. Because you can't watch Daughter of 20 Faces without raising that. The Jolly Roger. So, like, I know they know how to, like, get anime or whatever.
I was going to say this for the end, but I'm going to complain right now. There was, once again, also, speaking of either not enough clips or the other major thing that was, I saw several times during the convention, was people are still relying on con Wi-Fi to play their clips off YouTube, which... is, like, rookie mistake number one. I swear, when my job isn't killing me, I'm going to do that video on, like, how to do a panel in the modern age. In, like, the most important part is here's how you get clips, and here's how you don't rely on con Wi-Fi, which always hiccups, even in the best of situations. You guys got to stop doing it.
It's making Al upset, okay? It's making him cry. Stop. Please stop doing it. I really enjoyed the Phantom Thieves panel. Again, I thought they, you know, did great research. My only suggestion is I would love some clips. Like, especially some of that stuff, like Daughter of 20 Faces is pretty obscure. So a lot of people really haven't seen it. Oh, and my only other suggestion is, when you're talking about Cat's Eye, don't forget to mention that the detective in that show goes to the cafe called Cat's Eye, where the girls work, who are the thieves' Cat's Eye, and he still can't figure it out. just an important detail that I like to mention. Speaking of things that are relevant to us in particular, we also went to the True Crime in Japan. I almost said podcast. That was not what that was. Although they could have done it. They could probably do a podcast panel.
Which was a perfectly lovely panel. Not really hot.
Oh my God.
Nothing disturbing was in it. It was just a delightful romp over some minor little crimes.
Yeah, I'm actually not going to talk about the cases on here. I will just generally talk about the panel. I thought that they did a very good, it was an 18 plus panel. So like, but they did a good job at the beginning being like, hey, I'm warning you now. Like, this is not like a little murder do, you know, like there's some really terrible stuff that we're going to talk about. So like, prepare yourself. I appreciated that. And I thought that they took a very serious tone. Like, I didn't think they put in a lot of commentary. I felt like they tried to be pretty...
just the facts, ma'am.
Yeah. I mean, occasionally, where warranted. I felt like they weren't commentating on, like, what was happening. But, like, sometimes they would talk about, like, the police doing nothing. Because we should talk about that. But, like, I didn't feel like they threw in... They weren't trying to be, like, clever or, like... And I thought that that was kind of the way to go with it. What did you think about their presentation, Al?
Yeah, no. They were very educational, which I think is relevant for the subject matter.
But not, like, boring.
Yeah. No. Like, but, you know, as opposed to, like... Hey!
Yeah, zingers or whatever. Yeah. I felt like, I guess...
I guess she couldn't get ahead after that. Mom. You're like, oh boy, no. Please,
yeah.
No.
I think what I was trying to say is I felt like they struck the right tone for the panel in terms of like the seriousness of what was being talked about. I definitely learned about some things. There were some in there that I had heard of and then some that I had not. There was a super weird Hatsune Miku video that was super, really freaky weird. And I wasn't able to glean, and then I did not want to go look it up, but I wasn't able to glean, like, was that like a real video, like an official
because
thing?
Because it's hard to tell because, I mean, you can buy... the Hatsune Miku program and make your own video. So it could have just easily been something that somebody made that just went viral because of like how weird and disturbing it is.
Right. So I was like, this can't be like official. I don't think. But I then did not go try to figure it out.
They did mention Penguin Drum, which I appreciated.
I would say that something I was kind of surprised about, because it wasn't just, I should have clarified this at the beginning, but it wasn't just true crime in Japan. It was like true crimes that have then been like, have inspired like anime or manga, and like what those things were. But I was kind of surprised there weren't more. And not that I'm saying they didn't have, that they didn't do their, like, I was just like, oh, wow, I really thought there would be more that especially anime-wise, I guess, because there were, a couple of them had inspired some, like, pretty obscure manga, you know, like, it wasn't even, like, a big something big. So I was like, wow, I'm just surprised that they're, I was kind of expecting, there to be like, oh, I didn't know that like that series was like inspired, you know, or something. Like I felt like, like something I had heard of that I didn't know was inspired by a crime or something like that. Because the ones, the series that I did know about, I knew that it had, you know, been inspired by like accidents. Yeah. I don't know if like there are more manga, you know, again, if we read Japanese or like, you know, that there would be more manga, but like, I was surprised there weren't more anime inspired by it.
I was just mainly, even after reading the Murakami book, I was just flexed how much Shunrikyo like existed and did crimes and blatantly did crimes and just got away with it for, I mean, I guess like Operation Snow White and Scientology proves that like it's not that much different over here, but like even Operation Snow White and Scientology is nothing compared to like, I was like, and nobody said or did, okay, cool.
That them, and then also like in recent events of like the Unification Church coming up because of the assassination, I wonder if that will end up, you know, inspiring some things. What was the thing they talked about? Like some judges were assassinated.
Who had,
or like, had attempts on their lives that were like doing a trial about this cult, and they were like, who could it have been?
And they just like blamed some rando that was like, it's clearly this random guy who was just in the area.
Why would anyone else have any motives? It was very interesting. Again, it was very certainly very disturbing. Yeah, I'm curious to know if there are other things. I'm kind of on the fence on this one, whether or not I feel like there should have been clips or like more, because I didn't think they talked a whole lot about the anime or manga components that then they inspired, so like maybe a little more like, especially, I mean, especially the big one here is Penguin Drum, where like might have benefited from seeing a clip there to understand like how it's sort of depicted, you know, like
yeah, you could have seen like any of the show, like the bombs on the train and Penguin Drum and stuff like that.
So I feel like maybe that would, I guess, be my suggestion, is to like show more from the, like, oh, and they talked about like 20th Century Boys, and it's like, obviously, that hasn't been made into an anime, but, like, maybe some manga pages to sort of show how that, to connect it more strongly, maybe, to the anime or manga that are inspired. I think that just would have been nice, even though, like, I knew what they were talking about, but I try to think about, like, okay, well, if like, you didn't know, right? Like, what does that look like? Or
looking at 20th Century Boys on your shelf as we speak.
I guess I'm not sure if this, you call this like a panel or an event, but they did show the 1994 Otakon AMV contest. That was the first Otakon, so it was their first AMV contest, and they did have a little like preamble before, kind of talking about like
why that happened in the first place and how like they were looking for something else, and like apparently one of the, like, forever staff members was like, oh yeah, I've got the original AMV contest all on this one VHS. What of it?
Yeah, and apparently has, like, lots of the, you know,
almost
like, has
almost every year.
Yeah.
Just still.
So, and there was, like, a little bit about, like, oh, people could send, so the people sent in tapes that they then, like, hold entries from. So they showed us sort of what was submitted. And then there were a couple that were on the tape that were
played at the convention, but were not in the running to win.
Because they were from staff. And then there were also just a couple of, like, random ones that were on this tape, and they don't know who made them or, like, where they came from or, like, what. They were just, like, at the end of the tape, which, for those of you who used to buy fan subs on VHS, like, you might remember that, like, to fill up a tape, if there was room, people might just put on random things like commercials or, like, AMVs or whatever to fill out a tape. So that's... Right.
I also just remember from, like, listening to old Anime World Orders episodes. Also, people had, like, little pet animes that they wish more people would know about. Some, like, fan subbers and stuff would, like, always throw in, like, the first episode of this one series that I want everybody to know about.
Nice. Yeah, so there were, like, a few of those on there. This was probably one of my favorite things that I did at the whole con. I mean, I was kind of anticipating it, and it was just like this peek at fandom. It was a peek at, I really want to hear from somebody who, like, wasn't a fan. I mean, I wasn't yet a fan in 1994. I was 10. I was, like, almost there, but I, like, wasn't, but, like, so I really wasn't even around then, but, like, I was very close to when I started watching anime, but, like, I want to hear from, like, the people who didn't watch anime until, like, the 2000s or whatever. Like, what did you think of the AMV contest? Because I felt like it gave you a really good picture of, one, what was available, and two, who everybody was. because, so, here's, like, all the, and I wrote down everyone that I could think of that I saw, and I'm pretty sure I got everything. So, and some of them were compilations, and some of them were all about one series. So, Akira, Detonator, Organ, Dominion Tank Police, Harlock, like the Harlock movie.
Yeah.
Riding Bean, Battle Angel Alita, Bubblegum Crisis, and then Kiki's Delivery Service, Nausicaa, Castle in the Sky, Lupin, like, TV, but also Cagliostro. And then there was the random AMV at the end that had Legend of the Galactic Heroes, which was my favorite. If you just look at, if you just hearing that list, like, literally that's everything that was in there. And it's like, okay, all of that is science fiction or Ghibli, basically. And, like, that's it. And that's pretty accurate.
There's one exception. Riding Bean is not.
Oh, yeah. It's very, but it's manime.
Yeah. I was just about it. It's manime as hell.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So, like, it's just like a nice peek at, like, what was going on then. And then, yeah, it had a pretty good crowd. And everyone seemed to really enjoy it, and so they seemed encouraged to maybe do it again and, like, do some later years and such. So I really hope... I'm, like, not even that into AMVs, but I'm, like, more into, like, old ones because they are such a snapshot of
the fandom,
what was going on
and,
then.
Like,
yeah.
The AMV community, the fandom in general.
Yeah, so I thought that was just, like, such a cool thing that they did. And want to definitely encourage Otakon to, like, more archival footage. I think that would be awesome. I mean, they could just, like, have a room that's, like, running this kind of stuff, you know? So, Otakons of the past would watch. Oh, actually, that made me think about, have they ever done this? Because I know that, did they do this in Baltimore where you, certain hotels you could watch certain channels. So, like, bring that back. Or, like, what if you had, like, Otakon TV at your hotel, right? So, like, if you're in the room, you could just be watching some old-ass 1994 AMVs or, like, here's what you do around Otakon or, like, Yeah, or a panel or whatever.
Or if they made like a temporary Twitch channel or something like that, where like...
Yes!
And they put it in the con thing of like...
Because they did have it. They did have a Twitch channel.
Because, I mean, they've set up some of that already for when they had to do the, you know, the super lockdown Otakon, like...
They did have a Twitch channel, but it wasn't streaming, like, live content or something like that. Okay. But I would... I know that people will probably disagree with me, but I remember Crunchyroll Expo has just, like, the live cam where, like, people can just, like, come by and be, like, in their cosplay and be like, hey, what's up? Or whatever. I'm like, I would totally watch that. Like, it, not, like, in lieu of doing anything else, but, like, totally would have that on the background to, like, see some cosplayers and, like, whatever happening while I'm in my hotel room. So, like... Definitely do that on Twitch. Maybe they were doing that. Maybe I was just too busy with the con to, like, check it out. But that's a really good point. Yeah, we could have had that on, like, in the room.
Otakon, I think we mentioned this pre-Otakon podcast, had a really musical emphasis this year. We had a bunch of composers. Clearly wanted the audience of my mom in particular because they had Caro... Wada, and all, like, he's had a pretty wide career, but his, like, emphasis on what he talked about was Inuyasha and Yashahime. I was talking about the con, and then when I mentioned that, like, my mom was paying attention, but, like, I could tell laser focus on what her son was saying when I was mentioning, oh, yeah, the composer, what do you call it, Inuyasha and Yashahime. It was like, tell me more. So I did see several panels with, and also with Yuki Hayashi, who did, and he, it was interesting, both of them kind of like have like a larger career, but they focused on kind of the like bigger shows when they were talking about stuff mostly. And he mostly focused on My Hero Academia and Haikyuu, which are definitely his like more popular shows.
Karuwada also mentioned, I went to the panel where they were in conversation with each other, and I think he mentioned it there, but that they are going to be doing Inuyasha concerts, and that I think it was the Toronto Philharmonic is going to do an Inuyasha concert, and he's hoping that maybe that will travel or something, so if people are really into Inuyasha. Your mom, and the likelihood, if there's a traveling concert like that, the likelihood that it's coming to New York is pretty much definite. So, like...
So my mom will be ticket purchaser number one for Inuyasha concert. Oh, right. Yeah. No, that is not a question.
But it was interesting to have them talk to each other because Karuwada is... further along in his career, so you know, you have like just very different perspectives. They started out very differently, so like that was all like kind of interesting to hear them talk about.
Yeah, because like Karuwada has a very classical training, whereas Yuki Hayashi has no classical training, and like, but I think people mentioned like they seem to like genuinely get along and like had like really good repertoire. It wasn't like very kind of like a like clinical, are you a colleague? So I was like, it seemed like they were more two people in the same field shooting the breeze, having a good time.
It was great to see that, and I really hope they do more panels like that with guests where they're just in conversation with each other, because it just flows, I think, so well. And then they did take questions from the audience at the end of the panel I went to, and actually the audience asked like pretty decent questions. I didn't think it was, you know, how that can be sometimes, but like the dominant part of the panel, it was them in conversation, and I just really liked the format of that.
Yeah actually, you know, because I went to their individual panels as well, because they were just back to back, and once again, like, I feel like the Japanese guests have gotten a lot more savvy, because they had, like, a good, like, three quarters of the panel was them just, like, having a prepared talk And, you know, I remember Caruana had, like, a lot of clips, and they're like, all right, here's this piece, and you know, it was the, you know, he was my thought process and thing behind all of that. Also, interesting thing that my mom was fascinated about, like, would have definitely asked more if she was at the con, is apparently, like, Yashahime originally started out as Inuyasha 2. It was, like, a completely different series, and, like, from its initial planning to what it became. And he didn't go into a lot of detail about that, but, yeah, it was, like, a lot more focused on just being originally just an Inuyasha sequel with the original Inuyasha cast that eventually became about the kids from Inuyasha. There, you know, Karawada also mentioned that in Japan, they're doing a Princess Tutu anniversary concert, but that it will be streaming online and will have some amount of English subtitles on a certain version of the stream if people wanted to watch that. So
that's so wild. Like, why would they do that?
I don't know.
I'm not complaining. But
when it caught, I know that we have several, you know, long-time listeners that are big Princess Tutu fans, so I thought, yeah, you made a big deal about it, and I was like, oh man, that is definitely something that I'm sure, you know, many people that I am friends with or are listeners to the podcast would love to know about. Because, you know, you don't want to be like, a week later, man, did you see that crazy good, you know, Princess Tutu, you know,
live stream or whatever? That sounds rad. I hope I get a chance to see that. I thought it was also cool that the two of them did the concert together as well. That closed the convention. So we got Caruana was like the first half of the concert. Then Yuki Hayashi was the second half. Then they both came out and joined the orchestra to do a final song, each of them, which was really cool. And so, like, we got to see them both. I think they both play piano. Mm-hmm. So, like, that was, like, a really wonderful way to wrap it up. And, like, their styles are so different that, like, you just got, it's like you got a mix of, like, traditional and, like, the more, like, bombastic. And, like, yeah, it was just a nice overall, like, vibe and for the end of the con. And like you said, Al, it felt like genuine appreciation between the two of them as they were doing this concert. So, and they were also, where I was sitting during the concert, they actually came out into the audience and like sat to like see the the orchestra and then like see the audience reacting. So that was really cool because I could like see them just like off to the side. So that was neat too.
Yeah, and I've said it before, I always find that, like, there are usually some really good Sunday panels that the Sunday concert is up against, but I always, for the last few years, been going to the Sunday concert just because I find it a very refreshing way to end the convention, and I feel like this year was no exception.
The other guests that I wanted to mention were Toshio Furukawa and Shino Kakinuma. They are married. And they also have, like, a voice school, and you know him as Ataru from Lum, and he's also Piccolo. Shino Kakinuma, it has, like, a lot smaller roles, and, like, she clearly, though, is, like, highly trained and knows how to train other voice actors, and, like that seems to be her strength, but she is like Naru in Sailor Moon. So she obviously became like very popular for a time with like the Nephrite story. And then I think she's Vidal, or she took over the role temporarily in Dragon Ball Z. I don't know enough about Dragon Ball Z, guys. You just fill in the blanks, Sarah. Anyway, but they again had like this great, I mean, they're married, so like, obviously they have a rapport with each other, I hope. But like, they clearly know how to talk about their work, how to talk about voice acting, like how to run an engaging panel, basically. And their panel was so much fun.
And I think everybody call it reinforces the idea that if, like, if old voice actors or, like, basically anyone old in the anime industry is doing a panel, you should go to it because they can just talk more freely than anybody else in the industry about stuff. And they're usually just, like, they're just a little more fun and a little more insightful.
There were many things that they talked about, but there are a couple of highlights from the panel. One is, in first of all, the audience all asked really good questions, which was nice. But, like, somebody randomly mentioned Rakugo when they were asking a question, and then both of them were like, oh, I've actually trained in Rakugo, and then they did some Rakugo, like, right there on the spot, and it was so cool. It was really good. And, like, even though they that I don't speak Japanese, you could still, like, get the, like, zing of what they were doing. It was so awesome. It was, like, a highlight of the con for me.
I think everybody that we talked to who went to that panel, if that incident alone wasn't the highlight of the con, it was definitely, like, the first thing they mentioned when talking about that panel. I'm like, did you see?
Yeah, it was so unexpected and just like a delightful surprise at the panel. One of the other really fun things they were talking about was about when you're in the voice acting booth or whatever, that like you might be, you know, I think especially, Toshio Furukawa was talking about like Piccolo, right? Who's like fighting all the time, like yelling, doing all this stuff. But like you can't be moving because you have to like be speaking directly into the mic. So he was like showing off, like not moving his head at all, but like doing all these like wild sounds and like how you have to like it's like you have to do it all with your voice. So, like, you can't be moving around, even though, like, the character would be moving around to, like, express themselves. Or if they're fighting, they're obviously moving around. So that was, like, really fun to sort of see him demonstrating that. Also, both of them, you know, are much later in their careers, but they both have their voices haven't changed that much. And somebody mentioned that. And then they said they actually don't do any special sort of voice training or anything. So, like, they've just been, I don't know, very fortunate, maybe? I don't know. But that, like, that hasn't been, like, an issue for them. And that, like, yeah, there's good. There's good all the way through.
I did also mention some of our friends, we didn't go see it, but they did go to the, like, vocal training. And they were talking about, like, how they were, like, learning to do like different villain laughs and all other kinds of cool stuff. That seemed like a fun panel that they did as well that I kind of wish I had gone to because they really seemed to have a standout time of like, this is how you do this kind of villain laugh and this is how you do this kind of hero laugh.
Yeah, I think that was a Sunday morning panel. Yeah, that sounds like it was a lot of fun. So, like, really entertaining. It, like, they did a great job. I mean, the guests are always amazing. And, you know, no shade to any guests who ever come. But it was, I think they did a really great job this year just presenting their work. Everybody did a great job that we saw.
I just want to say that, like, overall, other than, like, one person at, like, one of the panels doing the, you know, the classic, I'm a composer, much like you. I think, like, most of the questions this year were, like, well done. We didn't have any, like, super stinker questions. Like, I feel like people generally, like, upped their question game of, like, you know, not asking some of the more, you know, maybe we just went to the right panels or the panels with the, like, you know, the right audience. But I feel like I don't remember any, like, super cringe questions.
Good job, Otaku.
Did see the Studio Trigger Cyberpunk first episode premiere, which was very exciting. As someone who played both the recent video game and played a little bit of the tabletop game the just to get a little tabletop weeds. We mostly played Shadowrun because all the old school people who I was friends with who graduated the year that I came in, graduated the year after I came in, they were all the old cyberpunk fans, and all the new kids were Shadowrun people. So most of my college years was playing Shadowrun. But I was at least taught the joys of cyberpunk from my esteemed senpais. So I'm very much looking forward to that cyberpunk anime and all. But it is very Studio Trigger.
I'm excited to see it. I didn't get to, you know, make it to that panel, so like...
I will say that it's very clearly based on the games. Like, I found out there were...
The video games,
yeah, the video game. The recent video game with Keanu Reeves. Because it looks very much like the Night City from the video game. You can even, like, oh, I know that area from the video game. It very much has that... as I said, I played the tabletop game and the video game. And it draws a lot from that. And they worked with CD Projekt Red, who made the video game. So if there was anything that was from the tabletop game, it did not strike me. I mean, the game itself is based on the tabletop game, but there are some, like, you know, little stylistic differences. And so it was very clearly based on the recent game. That, and I always confuse Doc Wagon and Trauma Team, which are both like the medical organizations in those games. I don't know why. I guess it's, you know, having played both of them.
Those both sound like video games. They don't sound like actual organizations. But I guess it's a video game.
Yeah.
So it sounds like something from a video game.
Yes. But I was very excited. It was very Studio Trigger. But you know, so, you know, it feels very much like the games, but it also feels very Studio Trigger. So I'll probably review it when it comes out.
I think somebody mentioned that it also is maybe not a fully finished the episode. Like, there might be like some, you know, like tweaks to it, which is really cool to have them bring that.
So yeah, no, it was very exciting to see like the kind of like the prototype. Fresh episode. I enjoyed it.
So one other event that I definitely think is worth mentioning is the Big West panel. Big West is the team, whatever you want to call it, the company behind Macross, the Macross franchise. And so, you know, at AX, there was a big load of announcements of all of these new licenses for later Macross series that have never been released in the U.S. and a lot of fanfare for all of that. So Big West also had a panel at Otakon, and they said that there was, you know, like a surprise at the panel. So I think a lot of people were really looking forward to this event.
To the point where I know several people that we are friends with who are pressed, like, cancel, like, after they got this big announcement, canceled interviews or plans that they had to go to the Big West panel. And, man, I have not talked to so many salty people after. And it wasn't like they, you know, didn't announce or show anything. It was just... people had expectations that were not met.
This is a complicated... I feel like it's a kind of a complicated situation. And the more that I, like, have some distance on it, the more I've thought about that whole experience. First of all, I would say that I definitely thought we were going to get an announcement about either original Macross or Do You Remember Love? But I also wasn't aware that Big West had already stated before Otakon, apparently, that, like, they were not focusing, or they would not be whatever. I don't know what the word they used was, but like they would not be focusing on things before 1987.
I'd like to insert my own personal conspiracy theory right here. Part of me wonders if this is part of the deal that they made with Harmony Gold to get over Macross here and to get Harmony Gold from threatening to sue everybody was like, all right, you can bring over all the Macross series that aren't related to Robotech, but you cannot touch any original Macross. Do You Remember Love, Flashback, any of that stuff that is just... That stays in Japan.
Right, and I think that's a good theory. I think, had I known that information going into this panel, I feel like my expectation would have been a very different one, because, like, so that in my opinion, that wasn't necessarily their fault, because, like, I didn't know that they had said that.
But I think also several of our friends had that same expectation and didn't know that announcement or that, like, little...
So I think there was that. But I would like to say that they showed us a short, and that was really fucking cool. Like, I was definitely not expecting it, but, like, the thing I want at anime cons more, which, unfortunately, Otakon didn't have a lot of this year, which is something I really love, is to see anime that I've never seen. Mm-hmm. Like, to see something, especially being as old as I am and having experienced so much anime, and also like how much stuff is streaming, you know, like how much stuff is available to us, to actually bring me something that I can't see is really cool. And so, like, while I was hoping for like something else, seeing a short that could only be seen in Japan at the moment, and only seen if you went to a movie screening of the new Macross Delta movie, yeah, that had just come out, I thought that was pretty cool. I do think they should have subtitled it, but I'm going to tell everybody a little secret. Macross, not that complicated, so, like, I got what was going on. Oh, there's some singing, some people are, like, sad, but also they're trying to revive somebody, whatever. People, magical things, music, 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 like, the end.
Okay, it's like, why did I like Alto again? Oh, all right, that's fine.
Oh, yeah, I was like, oh, it's voice. That's it. I really liked the short. I thought it was really cool. Yeah, I'm so excited that we got to see it.
It's funny, I didn't read that press release, so I didn't. I just went because I just was interested in what they were showing there, and I didn't really come in with any expectations. So I basically, since I had no expectations, I wasn't disappointed. And then I was like, oh, that was a panel I went to. That was interesting. And then just like seeing people we know, just like the like mix of like disappointment and rage, I was like, whoa, man. Crazy.
I am not like the biggest Macross fan in the world, you know, like I have seen all of the Macross and I like a lot of it, but like, and I did really want this, like I do really want original and like Do You Remember Love, like I want those things, but I definitely don't see myself, they're giving me Macross 7, I almost can't ask for more than that.
And we did watch the first episode.
Well, I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
So, like, while at... I feel like initially I was very disappointed, but the more that I, like, kind of reflected on it, like, I'm good, and I am... I think it was really cool. Like, literally, we're the only people in the United States who have seen that short.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's exactly what I want to have more of. I mean... I love to get, like, a movie screening. You know, like, they've had that at Otakon, like, a few years. They haven't done that recently. Would love to see more of that. Like, I love to see something new, which is pretty hard to do, you know, now. So, the other thing, though, I wanted to say in terms of getting Do You Remember Love or, like, original Macross is, so, at the end of this panel where they showed us the short, but then they were, like, really going hard about buying Japanese Blu-rays for these movies. So, like, I know that there is a Blu-ray of Do You Remember Love in Japan. So, like, I think the way around this would be for them to release a Japanese Blu-ray with an English subtitle track, because the new, what were they pushing, the Delta movies or whatever, have English subtitles. They were, like, really going hard, like, you should buy these. And it's like, if it's going to be licensed in English, I think I could wait. Like, so I feel like that is an option and something maybe they could do or push. Because I don't know if I could afford original Macross on Blu-ray in Japan just because of the price point. But I could definitely, like, swing, like, a movie. Like, I would pay for that movie. So maybe that's a way around doing it if they really can't touch that stuff on the state side.
And they already have some connection with Crunchyroll, just like kind of what they've done with like certain Typhoon stuff, just like, and you know, like, hey, import, you know, Do You Remember Love on Blu-ray, throw right stuff. You know, you're not buying an American version, you're just importing the Japanese.
Right. And I think that seems like maybe a viable option that I would like to see. Heck, I don't know anything about the Japanese Blu-ray of Do You Remember Love. Maybe there is an English track on it. I don't even know. Somebody write in. Come to the Discord. Tell me. Also, like Al mentioned, we did go see the first episode of Macross 7. One, to support Macross 7. Two, to see it in blue, because this is the Blu-ray. So we got a sneak peek at like what the quality of the Blu-ray is. Here's a big surprise. It's fucking gorgeous. Like, it looks so good.
A three, so Kate could relive the Wonder of Planet Dance.
Okay, so I really disappointed Al, and I had to apologize to him. And I apologize to the audience, too, because I did talk about this. And I said that when Planet Dance came on, that I would clap for it. But I didn't remember that, like, they don't really play Planet Dance in the first episode. They start to play it, and they get interrupted. So I didn't do that. I did clap for many other things in the first episode, and it was really great to see it. It does not disappoint. I really enjoyed the audience because there were some people in there who clearly did not know what Macross 7 was or have, like, any clue what was about to happen, who seemed to be enjoying it in the way that I think that they would, those modern anime fans. I am really curious now that Crunchyroll has bought Right Stuff, whatever the frick that means. And Nozomi is part, I don't, whatever. We don't know what it all means yet, but I'm not happy about it. But I do wonder if that will help us get some Macross streaming rights. And because I do, would love Macross 7 to be streaming, because I just think it could really, like, I feel like people could really enjoy it, but access is an issue.
Plus it is the longest Macross TV show, so it is a little bit of a heavy ask, but if you like let people sample some of what you call Basra's screaming, listen to my song,
it's so good, you guys. It was so great to see it. I'm really excited to get the Blu-ray. I think I will rewatch it when I do. I'm also really excited for the Macross 2 Blu-ray. I feel like I'm much calmer now than I was at the con. But there was no point in which I was disappointed at seeing a short. I just also wanted this other thing.
I didn't realize you were as upset as some of us.
Oh, I'm not. Oh, no. There is no way for me to be as upset as other people were about this.
Oh, I was like, man.
No. I was just like, oh.
Okay. Because like,
oh, man.
Because like, that was like, you killed my father in front of me, anger.
Yeah. No. I was nowhere near that. I think people are kind of expecting another Macross to be announced sometime soon, like a new series possibly. So I'm curious to see.
The guy, because they had some interview clips with one of the Big West officials. He wasn't there, but they had pre-recorded. He said they were working on a new Mac Russell we're going to announce it soon.
So I think, you know, everybody's kind of anticipating that. I did feel like the Big West panel kind of came off a little corporate-y, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, kind of in that weird, like, awkward, like, going to an Aniplex panel, like, or, like, somebody compared it, like, a Bandai visual panel, where you're like, okay.
At no time did they claim to know what Macro's fan want. So, you know, that's something.
But, so I feel like there is like that. I also often don't go to, I realized going to this panel that like I haven't been to an industry panel in a while, except for like a discotheque panel, which is a very different experience.
Man, people were very happy at the disco
panel. They were having a great time at the discotheque panel. There were some very... what? Wait a minute. They? What about you?
Oh, I guess there was something that was an interesting announcement there. True, true, true.
Like, oh yes, the people.
The masses. The hoi polloi. They had a good time.
Let me tell you, audience, that after that panel, I was like, so... Ursi got Sir Rewatch podcast, and I was like, fuck no, that's like 100 episodes. Like, so I'm sorry, everyone. Sorry to disappoint you, but I will not do it.
Come on, kid. There's some really great episodes in there.
I mean, there are.
All you have to do is commit yourself to like 180 episode Rewatch podcast. You do it without even realizing it happens.
No.
Like 5 to 6 years it would take to knock it out. Over like a flash.
So saving my favorite thing for last, which is the Artist Alley, as everyone knows. So in the same space this year, same setup. I did, this is just offhand, but I did hear some things were stolen from the art show. That was at Feedback, which is really horrible to hear. But I haven't checked in actually online to see if artists were having other, you know, like regular table artists were having, you know, they always have some issues every year with some things like getting stolen. But for the art show is like really weird. Usual setup, and I spent even more time there this year than I last year. I was a little hesitation because it was really busy down there at times, but this year I felt a lot more comfortable, so I was able to spend a little extra time walking the booths, trying to take a closer look at things.
Seeing a whole bunch of Genshin Impact and not realizing what it's from.
Luckily, this year, so a lot of the times I was in the Artist Alley with another person, so they could be like, all right, that's Genshin. Okay, all this side of this booth is Genshin. I mean, there were places that had labels, which was helpful for me to, you know, I'm like, you know, it's the thing is, like, when you don't know an anime character, you could say, like, all the anime characters look the same. You're like, I don't know, like.
Kate, how could you say all Genshin Impact characters look like when we both love Midori Bardo?
Yeah, it's just like, I'm not saying they actually all look alike, but when you don't know what something is, it all kind of blends together as being the same thing. I don't need any of that. I don't need no at-me's, okay, about how like your favorite character is so distinct from all the other Genshin Legends or whatever they are.
All the other Genshin Impact like Midori Bardo.
So beyond Genshin, there was of course a lot of Spy Family. Although I would say I didn't feel like it was overwhelming, as if there was a lot. Don't get me wrong, and like you had a lot to choose from from it, but it didn't feel like everybody had it and everybody had the same thing. I don't know. Like, it felt like a lot, but manageable and not overwhelming.
Was there any your thirsty your fan arcade?
I mean, sure. Actually, though, for the most part, I thought it was all, like, more tasteful than I was expecting. So, like, claps, I guess? I don't know. Maybe that was, like, hidden behind. It was like, no, you come around this way for the real thirsty. I don't know. I mean, there was some, of course. You know, of course, we saw, like, Demon Slayer, Jujutsu Kaisen. That, you know, they were still big. But then I saw lots of other, like, smaller things mixed in with all of that. And, like, so I thought that there was actually a pretty good mix this year because I saw Ranking of Kings. I saw Odd Taxi. I saw, like, at least three people had Our Flag Means Death. Princess Tutu, strangely well represented. Like, four, I saw at least four booths. I put pictures every evening in the chat of what I bought in Artist Alley, but I bought a giant Gein patch. Like I was saying at the dog panel, they brought up the series, and I was just like, I, like, lost my mind when I saw this at this person's booth, because, like, it was just the... There was nothing more unexpected in that Artist Alley than this. Like, I promise you, I don't care what you are a fan of, there is nothing more obscure to find in an American Artist Alley than a $30 giant patch of Gein. There were just, like, lots of moments like that. I saw Ranma, I saw Inuyasha. You know, and I realize now, because I was surprised to see so much Fire Emblem Three Houses, and then I was told by somebody, like, oh no, that's because there's a new game, like a Dynasty Warriors-style game for that out, so that's why I was seeing them more. Because, like, popular, but, like, it's been a while now. In terms of what were the items, I felt like prints are always big business in the Artist Alley. There is no doubt. It is the number one item there. But I felt like this year I saw more people only selling prints and not selling, like, any other merch than I feel like I have in the past.
Because I think you said, like, up until this year, it was almost like it was half crafts, half prints. A lot of times.
Or, like, people will have prints, but they'll have, like, lots of other little, like, tchotchkes or, like, stickers and other stuff that mm-hmm. they, like, almost, I don't think there are very few people that don't sell prints at all, but there are some because they are doing something, like, really crafty. But most of, like, if they are an artist who's making drawings, mm-hmm. Like, they will have prints, even if they have other types of merchandise. So, but I thought, this year, I felt like there were more just selling prints. Maybe I only feel this way because I bought more prints than usual this year. My methods are not scientific, so I could be totally wrong. But the big new item that is the hot item of the year.
Take it from Artist Alley expert Kate.
I am the Artist Alley investigator, okay? The big item is Ita bags. And, like, holy shit, you guys. The level of quality of these Ita bags that people are having made to sell in Artist Alley is, like, so good. Like, very, very high quality, like, unique shapes, unique designs. Everybody I saw that had them were just, like, they were beautiful. Very expensive, like, you know, like 80, 90 plus going above, like going up from there kind of range. There were a few people that had some smaller ones, like little, like, pochettes or, like, little, like, wristlets. So those were a little bit, you know, more affordable, but most of them I'd say were like $80 and going way up from there. But like the quality, I did not buy one because unfortunately, I mean, I have a bag already. Like I have a tote Yeetah bag. So like, I don't really need one, but also these types of bags that they were doing that had all these really creative shapes and stuff are just not really like, I would say like ergonomically comfortable for me. So unfortunately it's something that I don't feel like I would actually use because it would hurt me like long-term if I was carrying stuff in them all the time. But they were so amazing. I loved them all. There was like one that was in the shape of a ghost and I wanted it. Yeah, there was that, but that was, I can't believe how many I saw. And I don't know. I didn't go into the dealer's hall. So I don't know if also there was like a million of them. But I was just really impressed with, you know, these artists are not, they're designing them and they're being made, you know, by a manufacturer. They're not like, I didn't see any like hand sewn ones. Although I did also see Yeetah jackets.
I was about to buy them.
So they didn't look super comfortable to me because I was like, well, then you're going to have the pins like sticking in your back or whatever. But they were super cool looking. Yeah, jackets was also new. I only saw one person with that. I will tell the artist alley, if you all start making the fake silk Japanese jackets, I will fucking buy that. Like, and I will pay you real monies for it. That I would definitely buy. Not an Yeetah one, but like if you did one that was like, you know, of a series, like if you did a Haikyuu one or like whatever. Hell yeah, I would buy that. That's like my number one thing that like when I go back to Japan, that's like I'm buying one of those and not like an anime one, but like it's like this is what I want to buy. So like if you started making an anime one, I will definitely purchase it from you. All right, so now I'm here to do what everybody expects me to do. So pins have plateaued, I would say. They dropped down a couple of years ago. And I think that they are now, like, they've settled at, like, where they're going to be, it seems like. So, still seeing enamel pins. Plenty of them. But not at their peak. And they haven't gone away. I only bought one. And it was an original character. It wasn't, like, an anime one. So, that should tell you. That's how you know.
Pins are dead.
Not what?
Pins are dead. That's what I got from that. Because what do you call it? That's how you respond to news. You don't take nuance.
Okay.
You just react. And what do you call it? Pins are dead. Anyone who sells pins is a fool. I gotcha.
Cool. So everything else I feel like was, you know, like it was all present. Stickers, buttons, the acrylic charms are like out of control. Maybe it's just because I don't care for them, but I'm like, Jesus Christ. That's where it's like, the market is saturated on the acrylic charms. It's gotta come down. It's gonna, like, the bubble is going to burst on the acrylic charms, everybody. But I think I've said that before. So, like, but it's really, they do such a nice job with them, but I just don't, like, have any where to put them. Like, I don't know what I would do with it. Anything else? I bought a sweater this year. I think I'm like, last year I also bought a sweatshirt. I feel like it's because Otakon is so cold that like I am like preordained to like be attracted to
anything that provides warmth.
Yeah, like I'm like, oh, I mean, I love sweaters and sweatshirts anyway, but it's like, it's the middle of the summer. Why am I buying this here? And it's like, no, I think it's because of the air conditioning of the convention center. And the one that I bought, I really love. Again, really high quality. I think that's the thing that we have seen over the course of the years at Artist Alley is just like every year somebody ups the game in like terms of quality for stuff. And I think that's especially true for like clothing items, the bags, etc. Like wow factor stuff. So another great year, the Artist Alley.
So I just have one question before we wrap this up. Was there any show, game, property that you were surprised did not show up more? Like last year and this year, I know me, my roommate, I think Adia Biwa, a few other people were surprised that like there wasn't more VTuber / Hololive. Not that you would be expecting that, but was there anything that Kate was personally like, I expect this show to, you know, like, obviously Spy Family, as you mentioned, like, if there was no Spy Family, you would have been like, well, I expected more Spy Family.
Not really.
Shocked that, what do you call it, there was not more Laura from, what do you call it, Tropical Rouge
Prequel. Oh, yes, naturally. Everyone I talked to mentioned that. Nothing comes to my mind. There wasn't anything that I was looking for that I didn't see. I wasn't, you know, Ranking of Kings was the thing that I was hoping to see, and I did see a little bit. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, there's so much. And I did buy one print of Ranking of Kings. I did maybe think, I felt like it was a darling, so I kind of thought there maybe would have been a little more of it, because like almost the print that I bought was, I felt like, unique of the few that I saw, because I felt like everything that I saw from that series was like the same thing, the same like kind of image. It also has like a really unique style, so I wonder if that just didn't really appeal to the specific artists and market. Like, it was like, how do you put your spin on it? Maybe, I don't know. I forgot to mention on here My Hero Academia, but like, obviously there was plenty of that. I don't feel like there was anything that I was expecting to see. And also, like, I, not knowing a lot about VTubers, I also can't tell if, like, everybody who watches VTubers is like, there wasn't any VTubers at all. And I'm like, I saw, like, 45. And you're like, that was not very many. And I'm like, okay, well, I saw more VTubers than I saw, like, Ranking of Kings.
I guess everybody kind of expected it to be, like, Genshin levels is, I guess, what. And I guess So I think it's more just of a, at least this person, I don't know about anybody else, more of a realization of how more niche it is than it might appear, just from how much, say, the people in our little clique talk about it, that, and you see, like, oh, they have, like, this person has, you know, so many million subscribers, and so you expect it to be, you know, then there's referenced in this anime, or, you know, somebody snuck in this Pekora to this background that I guess we kind of expected to see, like, it to be Genshin levels, whereas it was just, like, you know, mid-tier shonen levels.
I mean, I don't know if it's also, like, the VTubers are, like, I don't know how much, like, you can also reinterpret characters from, like, a game with a story in it that, like, I just wonder if there's, like, something about them being, like, real people, or, like, I mean, obviously I know that, like, they have virtual versions of themselves, but they're like real people who aren't, like, you know, they aren't in a video game, yeah, like that you're control, you know, playing, yeah, as that character or something. So like maybe there's some disconnect there. I don't know. That's my only like random thought about it. And now I'll ask you a question, Al. So how well was Fate represented in the Artist Alley?
I mean, it was there. I feel like at this point, Fate is pretty evergreen. There was like no Tsuhime, but we also like haven't gotten a Tsuhime anime, and Tsuhime remake only came out in Japan. I'm curious. Because Witch on a Holy Night is going to get a anime at the end of the year. I'm curious if, like, we'll see a bunch of Witch on the Holy Night next year. Depending on how well that anime does. So, Garbage Fire, then, where people just aren't interested in it, we might not see a lot. But, I saw about a decent amount of, the classic Sebia, Archer, Rin, a few of the more popular Fate Grand Order characters present, but not overwhelming, is what I can say. I also only saw a half of the Artist Alley with you. So I feel like it. Also, I only saw pretty much like your most popular Grand Order characters. I didn't see anybody who was like a little more obscure or niche. It was, your Ishtars and your, Mash. Kind of the more popular mainstream Grand Order characters. I just feel like I said, at this point, the main Fate Stay Night crew is kind of evergreen. Like, it'll always, like, kind of like, oh, it's a Yoko. Of course, there's going to be at least one or a few Yokos at, as we were mentioning. Like,
I did see a couple Yokos.
So I feel like Fate was kind of like that.
That brings to a close another year of Otakon. The 2023 Otakon is the same weekend as it was this year. Hotels are up. Many of them are already booked, but close by ones are available. Tickets are not up yet. And, no guest announcements or anything like that. But they did announce the theme for next year. I'm sure that many people, as always, don't even know that every Otakon has a theme. I don't know if they've always had a theme. That's a great question. What was the 1994 theme of Otakon? But the 2023 theme is trains, which I'm pretty excited about. I don't know if I have anything to contribute, but I'm really excited about other people talking about trains.
I was about to say, Ed Chavez could do the whole trains. Just trains in Japan. You mean anime? No, just trains in Japan.
I mean, I really hope somebody does something like that, or like pulls out trains from different anime and like talks about, because I'm sure most of them are like based on real trains or train lines, etc. Like, I think there's a lot to be done with it. I don't think I could do, like, it's like I have a lot of ideas that I could not execute. So I'm just hoping, because I do love trains. I don't love trains in the way that like train otaku love trains, but like I would be really excited to go to some train panels.
And my joke is someone should do a panel on training arcs. Because I think that would be hysterical. And Kate thinks that is a crime against language.
Yep. But what about the future of Otakon? I feel like that's where we always end. The future is bright!
My only concern, and this is not a 2023 concern, this is like a 4 or 5 year down the road concern, is do you think that they'll ever have to have a registration?
I mean, I think they might have to have one next year.
Because, I mean, what I remember was like the debacle that was the 1 year that they had the registration cap at Baltimore. It had weirdly sunk the numbers.
Yeah, but I don't really get that.
But yeah, but
I don't understand why that happens.
Because like so many for-profit cons have registration caps, and it only just makes like a mad scramble for tickets.
Yeah, like they sell out. You know what I mean? Like, it'll be like, you know, whatever. Anime NYC is like, Saturday is sold out or whatever. So it's like, I have no real, like, information about why this would be. But I wonder if, because in Baltimore, they couldn't sell single days. You know, and that was always, like, a big issue. So I wonder if it was something about 3-day badges versus, like, single. I don't know. I don't understand why that would, like, make numbers worse. But I do think that based on what they said at feedback, based on the number that they told us, if they didn't hit their cap, they came really close. Because the convention center cap is, I believe, 42,000 is what they said. And then they get a couple extra thousand because they're using the Marriott. So, like, I feel like they're in range to have hit where they can be. I mean, maybe they don't have to, maybe they don't have to announce a cap. I don't know. Like, it's almost like you don't announce a cap. You just say, like, hey, Saturday sold out. Like, you know, like, there are, obviously there has to be a limited number of something. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like if you just show up anywhere, right? There's a limited number of seats in this theater. Like, things sell out. So, like, maybe it was the announcement of a cap in particular versus, like, just letting things sell out. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like,
I just said something that, like, I'm, like, super glad that the numbers were so great. And once again, Otakon saved. Like, we don't have to worry about Otakon. It's just, like, or maybe things have changed, and this time, if they were like, all right, 45,000 tickets this year, like, would it, you know, would the numbers not go down, it would just be like, all right, you better have your, what do you call it, your, you know, you better decide if you're going to go to Otakon at least within the month that the tickets go on sale, because if you wait any longer than that...
Like I said, I feel like maybe they just don't have to say anything, you know, yeah. Like, it's like, there are a limited number of tickets, there's a limited number of everything, like, oh, Saturday sold out, well, Saturday is sold out, like, the end, like, I don't think anybody who bought their Saturday ticket sees that it's sold out and be like, well, now I'm not going, and then, like, if you are, no one cares because you already spent your money, so, like, they still get your money, so it doesn't matter. I don't know. I do think it's interesting that the Otakon staff were like, we don't want to be bigger than this. Like, this is maybe too big. Like, we were not equipped to deal with how big this was. And, like, we have to figure out how to deal with this many people next year. But, like, the staff itself, and again, I think this really comes from their nonprofit status, right? Is like, no, we're good. Like, we good. We know, because somebody in the audience was like, so, like, you know, it could, like, get bigger. And they were like, no, thank you. Like,
okay. Late stage capitalism says every year has to be bigger than right. last year.
I mean, and obviously, I think they want it to be, like, pretty consistent in size. But, yeah, they were like, no, nope. This is, like, probably all we can handle. You know. It's a small staff, it's a nonprofit, etc. Like, I really, and I don't want it to get bigger either. I think Mike, I thought you were, what you were going to say, Al, is like, do we think that when people see these numbers and when Otakon is hitting these kinds of numbers, is it going to be harder to get, is it going to be harder to get tickets? Is it going to be harder to get your hotel? Is it going to be harder for those of us who have, you know, basically made Otakon a special home, like, every year, is that, like, going to be harder and harder to do?
I mean, those are all good questions as well.
You know, and I obviously want Otakon to succeed. I think that it is, so I think I can be selfish in saying I do not want it to go further than this, and I always want to be able to go to Otakon. I feel comfortable saying that, and like, Otakon means so much to me that when I heard that those were their numbers, I, like, almost cried. I was so happy to know that, like, Otakon was going to be around for us, like, that it would still exist. And that we will get to continue to enjoy it, hopefully for like the rest of my days. I was really nervous about getting our hotel this year. It seems to have worked out fine, but yeah, that is something that is on my mind. Like, oh, okay, that's a heck of a lot more people, but also a lot of those people might be coming for one day. We don't know, you know, like they might be coming in for the day. DC is a much more like, you know, kind of
hub.
Yeah. Where like a lot of things feed into it. So like, you know, maybe there isn't going to be that competition, right? Because people are coming, they're just coming for Saturday. Like they don't, whatever. I mean, I think it remains to be seen. I'm also super curious to see if they're doing those kinds of numbers next year, or if there was like a, you know, the, what are they calling it? Like revenge travel or whatever the weird terminology is, like that people are like there's pent up demand. So like people are going out, but like, is that going to be like a sustained demand, or is it going to be like, it's still going to be good. You know, we're still going to be fine, but like, we're going to dip down a little bit from like peak. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it'd be very interesting to see. I'm curious how things go. I was wondering if like, you know, it's back, baby. And now every year it's going to grow like it did back in Baltimore.
Oh my gosh. And I just don't know if it can based also just in the venue that it's in, you know. One thing I would say, though, that was nice is that even though there were lines outside and there was a bit of a crunch in that dealer's hall area, I felt like overall, despite those numbers, I really didn't have a problem getting around to panels. I didn't wait in line for those. You know what I mean? There was the line to get in and then there was the dealer's room line. But like otherwise, it was like, I was freely moving. I saw everything that I went to try to go see, you know, so I think it can handle the amount of people that we're talking about, which I feel like is a really nice sign for the future. Right. Well, I hope to see all of you at Otakon 2023.
I hope to be there. Otakon was a blast this year, and I look forward to it being just as fun and them getting Kenjiro Hada to come. Because, you know, clearly they want to make me happy at Otakon 2020.